Welcome to Tilt Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about burn downs, whether you should go fall or spring, or does it really matter on alfalfa. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at the $100,000 Ag Innovation Challenge. Ag History Minute, we'll talk corn silage. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap it all up with a Field Good Friday. With me today is Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilties out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. All the way to Brazil tonight is the Packer game. It will be on regular NBC as well, from what I've heard, not just Peacock, because that was the big thing. Like
for local
viewers, be able to watch it.
I wonder if like Milwaukee or Madison or how far that they will consider local.
Yeah, I always think of, because our local NBC affiliate is 26, but yeah, you've got, I think it's like 12 or something in Wausau. Like, yeah. They have a different. I used to know when I was in college, so I went to college in Stevens Point.
And you'd have to get,
we were like, right, that was the line.
Channels. Would like, you get both?
You'd get both, yeah. Sweet. So we have like two 26s and two. Was it two fives? They're like, yeah, it was. You'd get double of certain. So slightly different. Like, a lot of the syndicated shows that are like national would be the same, but then you'd different local news and stuff. So it was always kind of interesting. But
what do you think of the Friday night game?
Friday Night Lights, man.
Yeah. No, not the same.
I think it'll be interesting to see how, because like time zone wise, I don't think it's any different. Like,
what does that mean, time zone wise?
Like, you know, they're just straight south.
Brazil, you're saying. Yeah. Oh, I get you.
As far as like London sucks because you're changing so many time zones.
Sure. But this is just.
Whereas this, you're like maybe one time zone off.
Right. You're not much, though. Yeah. That's a good point.
So I think it's still probably a long enough flight. I don't know what the flight to Brazil, like how long it was, or. Because I know they were there yesterday already. They showed their practice. Like, I saw pictures from the practice and stuff. But, yeah, it's in a soccer stadium, so hopefully it's in better shape than the one in Mexico City where they had to cancel the game because they had like a concert the night before and they totally wrecked the field. I do have to laugh at the Eagles are totally playing the home team card and like not wearing any green. Because that was the big, the other big thing was this soccer team. Their rivals are green, so
okay. So then
the soccer stadium they're in, like, is no green.
Okay.
So, but
they were going to wear the whites.
They're going to wear whites, black helmet, and
really
black pants. So they will I guess maybe the letters are green, but the Packers, these colors don't run. They're going to be in their, I think, away green uniforms.
Yep, so, okay. Yeah. That is interesting. Yeah, shout out to the Brazil fan. Felipe, who was
years ago, an intern
for us was from Brazil, and he's a huge Packers fan, so I'm sure he's pumped.
Maybe he'll be at the game.
Maybe. I tried reaching out to him. Usually around his birthday time, too, I'll Facebook message him and stuff. But
sure.
Hopefully down there, they're excited. Some of those people probably, it'd be interesting whose fan base is more. If it's more of Eagles or more of the Packers.
Right.
Because you probably don't know till the crowd shows up even. And maybe they're fans of neither or both, and they're just sort of there to watch a football game.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not. So the Olympics were just there a few years ago. So, I mean, it's not somewhere where people, I guess, don't travel. And like you said, if we had Felipe Hanan, who we went to high school with, he was an exchange student. Like, we've had Brazil students. My brother-in-law had a student in his grade that was from Brazil. So, I mean, there's some connection at least here to that. So, it's always kind of interesting to have these out of country games and see what they do for the market, I guess. I don't know.
It's good. It's good that the Packers, like, that it's the first game of the year that
right.
they can...
They don't have to, yeah, screw up the middle of the year
right,
somehow.
Right, travel yeah. that way, and it shouldn't be that big a deal, and it almost does still feel like preseason, so it might be a good way to... Nobody's used to some sort of protocol of a home game or anything like that
yep.
yet. I mean, obviously, most of the veterans maybe are, but yeah, it's just the start of the year might be kind of nice.
Yeah, and it is a Friday, so that gives them... Like, even if they come back tomorrow, a fairly regular week going into week two, other than probably a longer flight than they're used to.
But yeah, in general, it won't be.
Yeah, it's not like different. When they went to London, didn't they have a...
Yeah, that game seemed to really mess up that season a little bit.
Right.
Like, it just was a weird timing, and they almost won it, because they lost.
They got like a 10-day... break kind of in there with it, but yeah, I don't know. This, like you said, I think the first game they've had, you know, over a week since the last preseason game, so they've, you know, they've had time to prepare. They could fly down early, they'll fly back and still have kind of the, be able to get right back into their regular schedule as far as, you know, have Sunday off obviously this week, but then start again on Monday like they normally would, so...
Yeah, NFL's back, though. That's,
yeah.
That's always...
It's football season. We got 17 weeks of... Well, 18 weeks because of the bye weeks and stuff, but of guaranteed football and then maybe some bonus football into the winter. You never know.
It's just always fun with corn silage starting and football and high school football and just fall in general. Like, you start seeing... Yeah, leaves you could start to see turning on trees, but my favorite thing turning is soybeans when you start to see those when yep. when they're at the right time doing it, not at the wrong time, but yeah, you can actually start to see some soybeans really
a lot
turn.
Of those early beans like yep. that I think wheat's gonna be behind. Yeah, they've been turning for over a week already.
Right. So it just has that feel a little bit cooler. We're gonna get some heat coming again, which will be good to finish out corn too. So it's
not just heat like crazy heat.
Yes.
Like they're talking almost 90, I think, on Wednesday or Thursday next
week. There's a day that we're gonna max out GDUs on corn
right.
in September, which
means silage might be coming sooner for some correct. Folks. There.
Maybe sooner, and then you got to watch that window too. Is
right.
Is sometimes that closes a lot quicker than you think when we get some of those hot days or disease come in, or it just gets tricky that you got to play the whole weather window.
Yeah, I mean, we got a little bit of rain yesterday, but otherwise it's kind of dried up. It's almost, knock on wood, kind of what we hoped the fall would be, like not a constant rain
right.
storm, like, oh, it's going to be miserable going. It was miserable planting corn, and now it's going to be miserable harvesting corn. It looks like we might get a decent window for the early planted corn anyway.
Yes, hopefully no.
To be determined for yeah. the later planted stuff. But
yes, hopefully the DCs don't have to be out. The dump carts is always a... just yeah. a... Not a...
It just... It makes everything like... You need that many more guys because then they're dumping into semis yes. on the road. You're making a mess. You got to clean the road. You're making a mess of the field.
Like, right.
Just it's so much more work in so many different ways.
Yeah, dump carts are unique in that they're a tool when needed, but when you have to use them, usually it's everything's not going well.
Right.
It's
not like, oh, I get to bust the dump cart out.
Right. No.
It's like, oh, I have to bust the dump cart.
And like you said, it's not just like, oh, well, this tool will make us faster. No, it's slower.
Yep.
You need more people. And you're right about the mud on the roads is the worst too, as you have and the damage you do to the field for the following year as well. So
yep.
yeah, hopefully and it does. It looks like in general we're gonna have an okay harvest window for that. And that's just in general, like you say, I'm knocking on
yeah.
more
knock on wood, as of right now, today, this prediction expires as soon as you finish listening to this podcast.
Yes.
But yeah, no, it so far what we know right now.
Yes.
But yeah. You ready to it's yeah, also I'm back to school time, so
yes.
kids aren't crawling up the walls anymore. They have to actually go sit in school and do things. So which is good. Get a little more energy out playing at school with their buddies. And
they always do feel those first couple of days are very anxious. And then after they get that cadence down, it's a little bit more.
Yep, first week's always probably a little rough.
Yeah. And just getting back into the swing, the routine.
Yep, remembering they have to get up for their alarm. Right. All that fun stuff, yeah.
Right, and even usually for my kids, it's not like the getting, it's going to bed at a proper, you know, like, time, hey, you got to go to bed at a decent time. And luckily the days are getting a little shorter that way, where it's dark by 8 or 9. It's getting pretty dark already, so it's not, it's a little easier that way. But
all right, are you ready to get into our topic for today?
Let's do it, Matt.
So something we talk about every year. And it's never anything I think we get a definitive answer on, because there's a lot of factors that go into it, and that's why we have this discussion, is alfalfa fields. We're coming to the end of the season. Most people have probably taken off at least three crops, if not four crops already, depending on cutting windows, and because that got a little messy to start with in the beginning of the year.
A couple were able to sneak out five.
Yeah.
If you hit it right. That early, early window, and so a few farms were able to get a fifth crop already off. So,
but now we're going in, I don't know about you, Todd, but I've got some fields that the spring, even though we didn't have a bad winter, had some stuff going on. I mean, last year we had such a dry year, I think we used up a lot of the reserves in some of these fields. And they've only gotten thinner through the season here. So now we're talking about burn down, and it's like, okay, what are we going to do here? Are we going to burn it down now in the fall? We're going to wait till spring and, you know, maybe sneak a first crop or something out. Like, what's the plan? And so it's kind of that time to have that discussion of, you know, we can do fall or spring burn down. And there's a lot of factors that go into it, and some benefits from one over the other. It all depends on your situation. That's why it's not an easy answer, and why we have this discussion is there's pros and cons to both. So I guess starting with fall, some of the pros that I could think of anyway are you get less residue for planting into the spring. Like sometimes those hay fields can be kind of a jungle. Yet if they're older hay fields, they'll probably have grass and other things growing. Maybe you planted a pasture mix or something to patch them in sometime in their life. So you've got a lot of mass, a lot of biomass there to deal with, and sometimes it's nice to just have that kind of cleaned up and go into spring either with nothing, or we could still follow with a cover crop if we burn it down in the fall here, you know, put some rye or something in. So there's that option. So you can establish cover crop. There's spring forage options then. So even if we're teasing first crop, you could still burn down, plant something else, and get, you know, a forage in the spring one way or the other.
I think one other good option there, I think that is good, Matt, too, is to consider, like sometimes they'll say, well, I'll take the first crop the following year and then take it out. But there is the option of, you know, putting in a triticale or rye, and you don't have to burn it down. In general, I go both ways on that. I've had it where we haven't burned it down, and then when alfalfa comes, it comes, but then it does get harder to kill later in the year.
Yep.
So a lot of times it is nice to kind of terminate it, plant something. And one of the other pros I would add to that is it does seem like we're able to get a better kill on the alfalfa, mainly, not always, and not like actually last fall, we didn't get a very good kill because the alfalfa was dormant.
Yep.
Because it was so dry.
So dry, yeah.
So I had a lot of farms say, like, why didn't we kill this stuff? It looked dead. It looked completely dead, but it was dormant. It really didn't suck down the herbicide. But most years, it'll really be sucking down that herbicide, and then the winter will kind of be the knockout punch.
Yep.
So that part is very actively growing. It's putting a lot of reserves down in the roots. So that is one thing to notice. You want it to be actively growing. Not like last fall where it wasn't. So most falls it is a better kill, but I would caveat that there is certain falls that this may not be a pro, it may be a con. So yeah.
No, and usually we're dropping in temperature, whereas in the spring we're waiting for temperatures to warm up.
Correct.
There's usually a better chance of having better conditions in the fall, like you said.
Yeah, whenever I try to get that timing in the spring, it gets a little trickier. You know, you can do it, but you just got to make sure we're getting sort of enough heat and that there is that window there to do it.
So spring also has some pros. First crop is an option. I mean, we could still get winter kill, other things that can affect it, but you have that ace in the hole, if you want to say that, of having it there. You could still plant a cover crop into it and to kind of bank that. Like you said, you wouldn't have to kill the alfalfa. You could plant something into the alfalfa and just harvest, a mix.
I do like the first cropping out option, but there too, it's got to be that the farmer knows that they want to do that, but it gives you a choice then of if you do get a lot of winter kill, maybe some of those older stands for some reason make it through better than other fields. It can happen.
Yep.
And you got more options then in the spring of more fields that you could keep. And then, so sometimes you can say, well, no, I'm just going to plant first crop and go to corn silage or sorghum. Both work quite well. I've done both, but they've also at times, again, last year when it was very dry, it did not work well. And actually what we ended up doing last year on some fields where we were going to take first cropping out, we just left them for the whole year in alfalfa because it was so dry that we didn't think we would have did very well on corn.
Right.
And that, it worked well for us. This year, I've got some beautiful fields of corn that were first crop alfalfa and went to corn. They're unbelievable. You wouldn't even guess that we took a first crop off. They look that good. You know, we've had the moisture. It seems like that soil's warmed up. It's ready to go. The corn really rocks. Usually you do get a little bit, like for corn silage, it'll be a little bit of a thinner stalk, a little more spindly stalk, and a little less population sometimes, depending. But in general, it looks good. But there's years where it doesn't work as good. But it is a very, very good option. But I would caveat that should be planned in general. It shouldn't be we'll see how it goes, because then when it does come to make that decision, it gets hard. Where if you know, nope, I'm going to do this, and we just got to maybe pull the pin if you don't think it's going to work, or no, we're going to keep it the whole year, then you just plan on that, and maybe if it really does poorly on first crop, you take it out.
And that's kind of, at this time of year too, I'm sure most guys are, but as you're bringing in silage, it's looking at your inventory and like, am I going to need that option? Am I even going to need more feed in the spring? Like, it's always great to say, like, you know, first crop is usually the highest percentage yield you get through the year. You know, most of your yield comes in first crop, and then it progressively gets less through the year for the most part. Like, do I have a place to put it in the spring? Like, am I even going to need it to really even consider that? So another thing, if you're looking, again, if you want to use the alfalfa as your cover crop and not plant anything different, you can just leave it there. And then it gives you something to plant green into. And another benefit that spring has is you know you're more than likely going to get that release in season of the nitrogen credit from the alfalfa. So you're going to have, you know, we call it kind of end day, where you drive down and you're like, oh, yep, it hit. Look at that.
A lot of the soil temperature must get a certain degree or something, and it all just mineralizes.
Yep.
And I have seen it in the fall. When we kill it in the fall, it does still seem like it, you know, that credit sticks around. Maybe it comes a little bit earlier. It depends. But I would agree with you, Matt, that if we kill it in the spring, it seems like we get a very good late season punch of that releasing.
Yep. All right. So then the flip side, so we'll talk cons of fall, is if you kill it out in the fall and you put no cover, then you're just opening yourself up to the potential for erosion. You've got a bare field. I mean, you'll still have some roots and other things to hold, but by the time you get around to spring, there's a chance that your field might be more prone to erosion in the springtime.
One thing to watch with that is tillage wise is sometimes you need it to break up some stuff. Sometimes there's deeper compaction in those fields than you think. Yep. with dump carts, and those tap roots can pull out some, but you might want to do a very consider a light tillage. Inline ripper isn't a bad thing if you have the deep compaction layer where you're not disturbing much of the above ground and you're just pulling out some of that from below. Traditionally, I used to not think we needed ever an inline ripper on alfalfa. Now we've kind of pushed more that's a potential, and maybe just it's in certain spots and some headlands where you got problems or traffic areas. And then in general, too, we just less tillage. I've had vertical till tools actually work quite well.
Sure.
On alfalfa in the fall, where we're just some of them maybe a little better than others, because you do need a little bit of aggressiveness to it, but you don't want it too aggressive where you're going to lose a bunch. So it is tricky that way of a crop, that sometimes you're better off leaving tillage till spring on it too. Is just leaving it and, you know, getting it killed, and then in the spring going after it to kind of help it. So
sure. You know, if you kill it off then and don't plant a cover, you also don't have that forage option. I mean, maybe you could plant some early oats or something, but it's just not going to be the same as what you would get out of that first crop, or even having a forage cover crop planted there. Field could stay wetter longer in the spring because it doesn't have anything to suck up the moisture. So you might have to then make additional passes to kind of dry it out if you're going to do tillage. If you're not doing tillage, then you might have to wait longer because it won't dry out as fast. And this is actually, never really thought about this before. I think it was like 2 years ago. There was a farm doing some like tile monitoring and stuff, and they had a hay field. And the N, they actually were losing some of the N over winter, and because it was showing up in the tile water out of the hay field. So you might actually lose some of your N credit over winter if you kill it and have nothing there to hold it. So if you don't plant that cover or leave the alfalfa in place, you might actually be missing out on some of the nitrogen credit that you normally would get.
Yeah, a lot of the N is in those roots. So it's in the roots, and whatever you can do to kind of have them roots hold it,
yep,
the better. So yes, Matt, that is something to consider of when you terminate.
Right. And that'll come down to timing and everything else too.
I mean, right.
The earlier you do it, the more prone you are probably to having that happen. So if you can push it later, that might help. But then some of the cons in spring is could get away on you. You weren't planning on a first crop anyway, but you wanted to leave it as a cover, and now it got kind of big, and you're like, I don't have a place to put it. I don't really want to cut it. So that could be an issue in the spring. I know this spring we had some of that with fields that we wanted to get killed and just couldn't get to, whether it was a cover crop or alfalfa. And then, too, if you terminated the alfalfa with the rain we got this spring, I had one field where it just got super wet then and never dried out because everything was dead. And we didn't want to do tillage because it was no-till. And, yeah, it can cause some headaches in the spring. Another thing is you might not, and we kind of talked about this already, you might not get the full kill that you want right away, so you may have to make a second pass targeting the alfalfa. Depending on what your crop is, it could be adding something more, so adding a little bit more expense to your herbicide program.
It you'd think alfalfa would be easier to kill.
Right.
But those that have been there 4 years are just, they're very hardy. A lot of times you can have like a 2 or 3 plant per square foot count for eight or 10 years of alfalfa. Like they,
yep,
they can, those that survive are just, they're,
it is survival of the fittest.
Oh man,
and they are very fit.
And think of that, when we plant, we're planting 40 to 60 seeds in that square foot.
Yep.
And basically, you know, this is like Hunger Games style tributes out there, that you're down to one or two, and those things are so strong that,
yep,
yeah, they aren't, they aren't going to die.
Yeah, they're not just going to fall over and be like, yeah, all right, sorry, you win.
And the thing to think about, too, is sometimes, because we're cutting it, so say you took a fourth crop and you want to go spray it off, we do need enough green growth back to get that herbicide down in that plant enough to kill it.
Yep.
And that gets hard, too, sometimes because that root is so massive, this big tap root, and you have, say, less than 4 inches of growth is not enough to intercept enough herbicide to get down and kill that plant. So yep. Both spring and fall, that's something to consider is height and what you got to work with of that material above ground.
Yep. And temperatures, too. If we have, you know, it needs to be warm enough, like you said, for it to grow, but also, you know, when you look at the labels of depending on what you're going to spray with, you need decent temperatures during the day and night to get a good kill. As if the plant isn't actively growing, it's not going to take it up, and you're just going to have more issues. So, and some springs, we just don't get those temperatures very quickly.
Yeah, you usually want 3 days in a row with above 50 degree kind of temps, and talking like more in the 60s. So, yeah, you do need that plant to be actively growing or at least starting out.
And not getting probably below 40 at night.
Right, right.
On those days. So, all right. So there's pros and cons of both. When we're going to do the burn down, whether we do it in spring or fall, what are we going to use? So Roundup is an option for most times, as long as it's not Roundup Ready alfalfa. A lot of times we'll throw something else in, so the Roundup and it's a long list that lines up behind the and, because there's a number of different products you can use, 2,4-D, dicamba. There's a lot of different combinations you can do to get a good burn down there, so it'd be something to consult with your agronomist or your spray guy and just be like, hey, I want to make sure it's dead. You know, what should we spike this with? What else are we going to throw in to take care of it? And yeah, if it is Roundup Ready, Roundup ain't going to do it.
No, it isn't.
It'll clean the grasses out.
But. And Roundup in general won't do it anyway.
Right.
That's one where, like you said, this plant seems very hardy, seems like can get through it. So usually it's a combo, like you said, of Roundup and 2,4-D, Roundup 2,4-D and dicamba. You know, if some guys where you don't have grass at all in there, it's just some dandelions and some alfalfa, then just going 2,4-D dicamba can really work well too. So having that kind of right mix, it seems like most guys have a mix that a farmer's used and their consultant, their agronomist kind of have come up with, that it just, they're used to, that's their mix.
Yep.
I a lot of, you know, where we're going quarter Roundup and pint and a half of 2,4-D. And then, like I said, sometimes I'll throw in some dicamba in there to try to get another mode of action there to take it back. So it is, there's a lot of options that way that work. It's just finding the one that you like the best, the one that you've seen gets the proper kill that you want. So the other thing to consider is consider the plant back with some of these on 2,4-D and dicamba if you're going to a cover crop. So most of the time on 2,4-D dicamba, it's 15 to 30 days. And some of those you can probably sneak in potentially a little earlier with no damage, but be something to consider if you're doing a cover crop. And then wheat, winter wheat, want a lot of guys to consider that. 10 years ago, if you just said, you know, putting winter wheat after alfalfa, you just said, I'd rather do corn. There's more options. I still somewhat agree with that. However, winter wheat after alfalfa, to get that wheat in early, really does work nice.
Right. No, it can be a very good combination.
Yeah. And then you just plant the corn the year after the wheat, and corn does great after winter wheat. So it does work well to get that in earlier. So a couple things to consider with that are just there again, what mix of chemical you're using so that you can plant the wheat on time and don't have a plant back that you got to kind of watch there.
Have you ever done Liberty burn downs on?
I have not.
Alfalfa? I have not either. But I wouldn't see why you couldn't throw that in as a potential option, because then you're...
I'm just thinking, like, you got me stumped on that. Why that's
like
not
instead
even,
of Roundup, like,
right?
Yeah,
because I no, I'm just literally here thinking of all of that's running through my head of why we don't, but I don't see.
No, I don't know why we don't either, but it, and maybe it's just because we never used a lot of Liberty in general. I mean, we've had a few guys over the years, and probably more so now on beans than anything in the last few years. Once in a while on corn. But, yeah, no, I was just, as we were talking, literally just thinking that, like, yeah, I can't think of a good reason why you would.
Well, one of the hard parts of Liberty could be that it would just burn it more than kill it.
Than kill it, yeah.
That I would think you'd either need, you know, maybe there with a Roundup Tandem, and obviously if it's Roundup Alfalfa, it's not going to do anything, but I do think you could have a problem there of just where it would burn those leaves off and not
kill the plant.
Because I've seen it in Liberty beans where there was an alfalfa, you know, it was an alfalfa field went to beans and we sprayed Liberty on it and it sort of singed all the leaves real good and got that stem kind of brown, but never killed.
Didn't fully kill, sure.
But yeah, I'm sure with a combo, there's some other things you could do.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. There's some things to consider when you're looking at your alfalfa fields this fall, and if you're thinking of taking some out, there's pros and cons no matter which way you do it. You just got to decide what your goals are, what you want to get out of the field, if anything anymore, and do whatever is going to fit best for your rotation. So always make sure that you're checking and assessing your fields, getting plant counts, and making, you know, informed decisions on these fields this fall. You might have good inventory now, but that inventory never lasts. It always gets used up at some point. And you don't want to also get into the situation where you're like, I got so much hay, I'm just going to burn off a whole bunch of these fields and then regret it later. So it's always good to make that assessment. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. There are currently 10 teams vying for $100,000 in the Ag Innovation Challenge. So there are 10 startup companies offering agricultural innovations that are vying for this top prize in the 2025 Farm Bureau Ag Innovation Challenge. American Farm Bureau Federation, in partnership with Farm Credit, is continuing to elevate the importance of entrepreneurship in agriculture through the contest. New ideas and innovative businesses have continually pushed the boundaries of what's possible in farming, said American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval. Doubled the prize and impact for this competition, which helps entrepreneurs grow their ideas into products that support farmers and ranchers in their mission to provide food, fuel, and fiber that we all rely on. So the competition provides an opportunity for these individuals to showcase ideas and business innovations. The 11th year of the challenge this year, which was the first national business competition focused exclusively on rural entrepreneurs launching agriculture and food-related businesses. So Farm Bureau is offering a total of $145,000 in startup funds through the course of the competition. So there are 10 semifinalists that will participate in a virtual pitch round with three judges representing various sectors of the agriculture supply chain. They are Grip Inc. from Indiana, GSR Solutions in Vermont, Helio in Utah, Justin Traps in Texas, Labby from New York, North Star Lime LLC in Minnesota, Padma Agrobotics in Arizona, Poultry Patrol in Iowa, Re-Envision Ag in Iowa, and Rise Bio Inc. in North Carolina. Four finalists will advance to the final round. They will each receive $10,000 and will be announced on October 17th. They will then compete on Sunday, January 26th in front of a live audience of Farm Bureau members, investors, and industry representatives competing for the top titles and prizes. So top prize is $100,000, runner-up gets $25,000. So pretty cool. We've got a couple local ones here. You know, nobody from Wisconsin, but around the Midwest. The Midwest is represented by Iowa and Minnesota there. So
I like the Iowa Indiana Poultry Patrol.
Yes.
And it's like a It's like an autonomous robot in with a bunch of turkeys. You can't quite tell what it's doing, but it's just kind of roaming around.
It's patrolling. It's keeping foxes out of the hen house, Todd.
Oh, increases bird movement, sends notification of feed spills and water leaks, tills the bedding of the barn, and reports mortalities throughout the
Every time it runs into a dead turkey, yeah. You're like, hey, there's the other one.
But yes, it's got kind of different. It's neat. These new robot things that are coming are going to be neat.
It's interesting looking, too. It's just like a set of wheels with a big sensor sticking out the top. So good luck to those 10 teams. And now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So as corn silage season is upon us, I thought we'd talk a little bit about the history of corn silage. So using the same technique as the process for making sauerkraut, green fodder was preserved for animals in parts of Germany since the start of the 19th century. This gained the attention of French agriculturalist Auguste Goffard of Salone near Orléans. He published a book in 1877 which described the experiences of preserving green crops in silos. Goffard's experience attracted considerable attention. The conditions of dairy farming in the United States suited the ensiling of green corn fodder and was soon adopted by New England farmers. Francis Morris of Maryland prepared the first silage produced in America in 1876. The favorable results obtained in the U.S. led to the introduction of the system in the United Kingdom, where Thomas Kirby first introduced the process for British dairy herds. The modern silage preserved with acid and by preventing contact with air was invented by Finnish academic and professor of chemistry Arturi Ilmari Virtanen. Virtanen was awarded the 1945 Nobel Prize in Chemistry for his research and inventions in agricultural and nutrition chemistry, especially for his fodder preservation method, practically inventing modern silage. So there you go. When you think of sauerkraut?
Yeah.
Next time you put sauerkraut on that hot dog or brat,
then think of the...
You're making sauerkraut silage for your cows.
Yep. Corn sauerkraut. I like that. Corn kraut.
Corn kraut, yep. Apparently it's not taken off for human consumption, but for dairy cows, they really like it.
Would it be corn kraut or would it be sour corn?
Probably sour corn.
But that sounds...
Sour maize.
That's usually if it's sour corn that you didn't do it right.
We'll stick with the drinking ethanol part of...
Yes. I like that. All right. Thank you, Matt. And thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's really easy. You just search Tilth Talk Radio in Apple Podcasts, or on your Android phone, download an app like Podcast Addict. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcasts, and you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now let's get into some cool beans that's corny and some current events. So cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. Our cool beans this week. Winter wheat planting is underway in 8 top growing states. So 2% of the country's crop has already been planted by September 1st. In one state, almost a quarter of the crop is already in the ground. So Washington State...
Is a quarter in the ground?
No, they are...
Okay. Sorry.
Well, close, though.
Okay.
So they're 22%, so they're close to a quarter. That's up 8% from last week and significantly ahead of the 8% last year and the five-year average of 15%. Then comes Colorado. They've got 7% of their wheat and right on par with their five-year average. South Dakota... It's looking at 5% planted, which is just below the 6% last year, but ahead of their five-year average of 2%. Idaho's got 4% planted, And their five-year average is also 2%, so they're a little bit ahead. Kansas, which is probably the most common wheat state we think of, is at 1% because their five-year average by now is 0. So they're actually ahead of the game there as well. Montana is at 1%. Normally they're sitting at 2. And Nebraska's right on par with their 1% that they're at. And then Oregon has 1% in, and they're lagging a little bit behind. Their five-year average is 3%. So it's happening. And
it's happening.
Once we get some silage and some beans off in our area, it'll be happening here too. But it's always, you know, we always talk about that wheat harvest that kind of starts in the south and moves its way through. But I think we always kind of forget the Dakotas sometimes are kind of ahead of that curve a little bit too. They'd end up kind of there and then have to go south again sometimes. Because right now, South Dakota is ahead of like Kansas and some of those other wheat production states. So that's pretty cool. Now we'll talk our That's Corny for this week. And more than 50% of ag economists think the U.S. ag economy is already in a recession. So with corn prices hitting a four-year low and the prospect for record corn and soybeans taking shape in the field, the eroding outlook also appeared in the August Ag Economist Monthly Monitor, as more economists are concerned that U.S. agriculture is either already in or on the brink of a recession, but if it weren't for strong cattle prices, the picture would look worse. So I think, not telling anybody anything new, everybody's been watching commodity prices all summer as they drop, and so it's probably on everyone's mind just as much as it is on these economists' mind, but hopefully it'll be short-lived and we'll see some progress in the new year. And now we'll wrap things up with our Field Good Friday. And this week, the 56th annual butter sculpture from the New York State Fair has come down, but it's not being thrown away. Jack Clapper, who is the co-owner of Noblehurst Farms.
What are they spreading it on? Sweet corn, or what's this butter going in?
Nope, they will recycle the butter in their methane digester.
Ooh, all right.
And turn
that it makes more sense. Yes.
Into renewable energy.
Like, yeah. This could be...
It's actually going... Everyone has... You just grab a cob of sweet corn and dip it into the statue as you walk through. No. So they will be going into their digester and turned into renewable energy. The American Dairy Association Northeast, in conjunction with Cornell Cooperative Extension, Master Gardeners, and Noblehurst Farms, dismantled the 800-pound sculpture at the New York State Fairgrounds. And ultimately, the butter, which was provided by... I'm not sure how to say... Oatka Milk Products in Batavia, New York, and was unsuitable for sale or consumption for a variety of reasons, probably because it sat out all week.
No, and like now that they show it being dumped out,
yeah,
you don't see there's green, and I don't think it's dye. I'm pretty sure that's just mold.
Will return to Western New York, less than 15 miles away from where it was produced, and be recycled at a local dairy farm. So they will combine the butter with other food waste from local food manufacturers and educational institutions and run it through the farm's digester, converting it to energy. The digester breaks down the material and creates enough electricity to power the farm, the farm's on-site creamery, and about 300 homes a year. Specifically, the butter from the butter sculpture alone will be able to power one house for 3 days. So,
no, it's
800 pounds of butter could power your house for 3 days.
So just in case your power goes out by a tornado again or something, just stock up on butter.
I mean, it probably would have lasted a little bit longer if it was edible in your house.
Yes.
But being it's not, still kind of a neat way to at least get a use out of it rather than just throwing it away.
Or just garbage, yes.
So... All right. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, Todd.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
So this week we talked about the burn down question of whether to go fall or spring. Gave some pros and cons for that. And whatever you decide, make sure you're paying attention to the assessment on the stand. Make sure it needs to come out and your inventories are looking good. Spotlight, we talked about the Ag Innovation Challenge from the American Farm Bureau Federation, as 10 teams will be whittled down to 4 for the final competition. Ag History Minute, we talk corn silage and the history of that. Cool Beans this week, as wheat planting is underway in 8 states. That's corny, as ag economists think the ag economy is already in a recession or on the brink. And Feel Good Friday was 800-pound butter sculpture from the New York State Fair being recycled and turned into energy. So thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.